Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I'm your host, John Orlando, the man that brings you this podcast every single time, indirectly from my second home of Providence, Rhode Island, via my first home, that being Columbus, Ohio. How are you? I hope that you are doing great. I hope that you are ready to talk about movies, because that's what is going to be discussed on this episode, number 97, might I add, of the PVD Cast. Joining me is the man that loves to talk about movies just as much as I do, Mr. Paul Markoff. You know that Paul's been on this podcast a couple times before to talk about movies, and we're going to talk about all the movies that we have seen from January till July, and then talk about a few of the upcoming movies that are coming out. As you know, it's summertime. Big time for Hollywood to push out some blockbusters, and I know that it seems that every single year the quote-unquote start to the summer blockbuster movie season starts earlier and earlier. This year it started way back at the beginning of May with Captain America: Civil War. And I've been trying to have Paul on for a couple of weeks now, and finally our schedules allowed us to sit down and talk about movies, and certainly it's going to be a great chance to just talk about the films that we've enjoyed and maybe some of the films we haven't enjoyed, because as a film critic, Paul gets to see a lot of films, and some of them are good and some of them are not so good. But all right, with that being said, though, before I get into my conversation with Paul Markoff, it's time for me to talk about some hot topics here in the world of professional wrestling. So if you'll allow me to do so, I'd like to give my 2 cents worth, my honest opinion about the WWE draft that just occurred a few days ago. SmackDown is going live, as it did this past Tuesday, on the USA Network, and they've decided to split the brands up and put some talent on the Raw, put some talent on SmackDown, and hopefully that will lead to some very entertaining television, some very good wrestling, but that is yet to be seen. But let's talk here real quick about the different draft picks that the respective brands made. Now, I don't think it's any big surprise that the first selection for Raw was Seth Rollins. I think that a lot of people felt that he probably was going to be one of the top three picks. Dean Ambrose being the second pick, he goes to SmackDown along with the World Heavyweight Championship. So I don't think that those two picks, to be honest with you, were surprising at all for me. I'll tell you what I was surprised by. And here we go. There just was a couple of questionable picks. For an example, I'm really wondering what Raw is going to do with Nia Jax. So she was one of the individuals, the 25th pick, by the way, overall, but she was picked by Raw. She was one of the individuals that was pulled up from NXT. And I'll talk about those picks here, more about those NXT picks in a few moments. But I found it weird that they will pull her up. That was a surprise. Who is going to take on Asuka for that NXT women's title? Because, you know, I think quite frankly, Nia Jax was the only believable competitor in NXT to take that title away from Asuka. She has been nothing more than a buzzsaw down there. And I just don't know, where do you go from here? Because not only that, but with the 47th pick, and a pick that occurred when SmackDown went off the air, Alexa Bliss was also pulled up from NXT. So there's another possible contender for that NXT women's title that is gone. So I'm wondering who realistically is a threat to Asuka and the NXT women's title. Possibly Bayley, former champion. I guess that would be somewhat believable that she could win. But the rumors are that Bayley may be called up to the main roster, and I think that was a big surprise for me that Bayley wasn't one of these people picked up from NXT. Nonetheless, it's going to be interesting what they do with the women's division in NXT. Let's talk, though, about the draft here as well. Speaking of the other picks from NXT, Finn Balor, which I was not surprised by any notion that he was picked by Raw, because quite frankly, I think that he's done everything he can do in NXT. He lost to Nakamura just a couple weeks ago. He's lost his rematch to Samoa Joe for the belt. American Alpha was picked by SmackDown. I think that's a great pickup for them. I think that that adds some more new blood, so to speak, to the tag team division. So I don't think that there was any big surprise there. And again, here we go. Another person picked by SmackDown from NXT that thins that women's division down there. Carmella was picked with the 59th pick. I kind of forgot about her, but so picked by SmackDown. And then Mojo Rawley also picked from NXT by SmackDown, which is, SmackDown also has Zack Ryder, so you wonder if they're going to reassemble the Hype Bros. That would be very interesting. As for other big names in the WWE draft, Charlotte went to Raw, Roman Reigns on Raw, New Day on Raw, Brock Lesnar, Sasha Banks. For SmackDown, AJ Styles, John Cena, Randy Orton. Those are the big names that went to their respective divisions. I'm surprised that they kind of divided up the Wyatt family, because I believe, if I recall correctly, that Braun Strowman went to Raw while Eric Rowan and Bray Wyatt are on SmackDown, so that's interesting. And interesting that they broke apart the club, and Gallows and Anderson being now on Raw with AJ Styles being on SmackDown. It's going to be interesting to see what they do with this. I don't know. I think that the WWE has an opportunity to do something really great with dividing up this roster. I hope it's not like it was, what, 12 years ago, 14 years ago, whenever they did the brand split the last time. Mistakenly, I thought it was only like 2006, but I think it was 2002. But I'm not sure on that. Anyways, we'll just say it's been a long time ago. Hopefully they don't have a world champion on both shows. I think that it leads to really roping you in, really hooking you into storylines. If you have somebody, let's just say Dean Ambrose holds on to the belt here this Sunday at Battleground, I think then that really builds a great storyline for a competitor on Raw to be chasing that title, to do whatever they can do. And supposedly, the rumor is that they probably will do more Raw versus SmackDown type of pay-per-views, which that would be fine. If they do it right, I think that this really could inject some really good storyline, some really good action into the WWE universe. Now, with that too, I'm going to talk about that just real briefly. I'm going to talk about how much I'm enjoying the CXC, that cruiserweight tournament that they're doing in NXT with the 32 best cruiserweights from around the world. Really good. I think, quite frankly, there's only been one subpar match, and it really wasn't too bad, but it was kind of subpar. The rest of them have been really, really good, and I'm really enjoying the CXC on the WWE Network. So hopefully, and there's already been some news that they've signed some of the talent that have shown up down there, so that's good to kind of replenish some of the people that left from NXT. So overall, I think things are looking up and things are looking good for the WWE. Let's hope it stays that way. So, all right, with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, let's just go ahead and throw it to a real quick break. And on the other side of that break, you're going to hear my conversation as we're talking about movies with Mr. Paul Markov. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to talk movies. John Orlando sitting down here with Paul Markov. Paul, how are you?
I'm great. Thanks for inviting me back.
Hey, no problem. Whenever I want to talk about movies, I know who to call.
I appreciate that.
And let's go ahead and talk about it, because I did research. December 16th was the last time you were on, and there was a particular movie. You know, I don't know if you've heard of it. It's called Star Wars, The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're familiar with
yes,
it.
Yes, yes.
We didn't get a chance to talk about it.
It's probably still in theaters. No, it's not, but...
Are you sure? Did you check the gateway? Are you sure they're not playing at one time at 11:30 in the morning? Anyways, so what did you think?
I liked it quite a bit.
Yes.
I gave it a B+. I should preface my comments by saying I enjoy the Star Wars series in general. I'm not a huge Star Wars fan.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say, next to Empire, I think the new one's as good as any of them, if not better.
Yeah, I really liked it. I know that many people gripe, saying, well, it's the same story. But to me, I thought that that was J.J. Abrams' way of going, hey, remember how fun these movies were? Here we go. You know, and there was a lot of similarities between the tales of the original and this one, but I thought that was nice. I thought that was a tip of the hat, you know?
I think there's a lot of similarities between all of the Star Wars films, really.
True.
But I think if you're setting the stage for the final three chapters, mm-hmm. you kind of have to have the building blocks in place. So I think it was all right that he essentially took some of the main elements from the first Star Wars and mm-hmm. incorporated it into...
Yeah.
Or Episode 4 and incorporated them into Episode 7.
Mm-hmm.
But he also, you know, he introduced completely new characters. Yeah. There are some new aspects to it. I think he laid his own path for this film and set the stage for, you know, Episode 8 and 9.
Sure. And overall, I think my only complaint, I felt that the villain was a little bit weak. I wasn't a big fan of Kylo Ren. But that's my only gripe I really had. And it really wasn't a serious, like... It didn't anger me that, you know, oh, Kylo Ren's here. I just think that there were some nuances with that character that they could have done a better job with.
I think maybe the only mistake with the Kylo Ren character was actually seeing who is under the mask.
Yes, I mean, that's exactly...
Kylo Ren is an intimidating yes. figure. Once the mask comes off, and particularly when you see the actor, if you don't already know, who's playing Kylo Ren,
yeah.
I think, and in particularly if you've seen that actor in other films... it takes a little bit of the steam out of
Ryan. I totally agree with you, and I swear to the listeners at home, we did not set that up. I did not. So, but I totally agree too. I felt my thing was more of this: is that the mask was on and off, on and off, on and off. And to me, I thought that as I thought back to my childhood, when you saw Vader without, and you only saw him twice,
right?
In the first three, it was something special. You know, it was like, oh, my, there was such intrigue and empire when you catch that little glimpse of him without the helmet on. And so I think that takes something away from the character when you have a character that has that, for lack of a better term, gimmick, that constantly putting on the mask, taking off the mask, it kind of ruined it, I think.
Well, and I think if they would have done it at the most opportune time,
right.
And I'm sure everybody and their mother's already seen it, but just in case they haven't, I don't want to spoil it. There is, you know, the high point of the film,
yes,
dramatically,
correct,
where I think that's where the reveal should have been.
Sure,
it come, as you mentioned, it comes several times.
Yes, yes, but overall, I liked it too.
Yeah,
I'm excited for the next couple. I know that. With episode 8, I believe Rian Johnson is tapped to be the director. Or he might be for both. I'm not sure. But I know he is for 8.
Right, yes, he is for 8.
And I enjoyed Looper, which he's well known for. I thought that was a great and a very interesting science fiction movie. So I'm excited to see what he will bring to the table.
Yeah, Looper was, you know, toys with the time-space conundrum.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
He deals in sci-fi. This obviously on a much bigger scale,
sure.
But what I like about Looper is, and even in his previous film that kind of launched, enabled him to make Looper.
Oh, which was Brick. Brick was phenomenal, you know, as well.
He toys with some general conventions that might make Episode 8 a little more mm-hmm. interesting than we might expect.
Sure, sure. Okay, so we took care of that. I wanted to get that off the list. So, what have you seen in the last few months, if you will, the first half of 2016?
The first half of 2016, I think, has been fairly good.
Okay.
The blockbuster summer season, I would tend to agree with general consensus. It's been relatively disappointing.
Yes.
There haven't been many big hits. I mean, even looking at the schedule before they came out, I think, you know, studios realized this wasn't going to be the summer that was last year, or the year that was last year, with Star Wars and Jurassic World and the Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
I think it got off on the right foot with Captain America Civil War, which I did enjoy. To me, that was kind of the third installment mm-hmm. of the Avengers, because although it didn't have Hulk and Thor, you had all of the other Avengers characters.
Yes.
And for the first time, everything that was brewing in the first two Avengers pictures finally bubbles over, and you have some genuine conflict between the group.
I enjoyed Captain America Civil War, and again, I think the beginning of May, it was what kicks off the summer movie season, this year at least, with that release. And I agree. I thought it was a great, great action film. I enjoyed the character conflict. I enjoyed it. Again, I have very little gripes, except for the smallest one, and that was Hot Aunt May. I just couldn't get behind that. That I don't know why. It just stuck in my craw that I'm like, this just doesn't work for me. But other than that, and that's so petty of me to even mention that. But overall, I liked it a lot.
I would actually say the Spider-Man was the weak part of the picture. It felt tacked on. It felt like we need an introduction because we have a new... We're rebooting Spider-Man again. This would be a great way to introduce him. I think the impact, or at least plot-wise, what's the rationale for bringing Spidey into the fight?
True. I thought that the actor that played Spider-Man, though, played him very well.
Yeah,
they did a very good job with that.
He was fine.
I can see that, where it was a little bit shoehorned in.
Yeah. There's bringing Spider-Man into the conflict from an Avengers perspective is not necessary.
No, true.
It feels like its own little story that, you know, they took a little detour and then we came back and bring him in, and, you know, It's almost as if they brought him into the picture. They realized, hey, wait, we're supposed to be good guys here, and we're bringing an unknown 16-year-old into an international superhero fight. Let's get him out, and then they, you know, he gets beat up a little bit, and they...
Yeah. But overall, I liked it. I mean, I thought it was good. Again, I think you and I both agree Marvel can do no wrong with their movies.
Actually, the last time we spoke, I said I had Marvel fatigue.
Oh, that's true. That's true. You did say that.
To me, they're a little repetitive, actually. Right. I feel like I'm watching the same film. So this one, to me, delivered because it's the first time, again, in the Avengers films, they toy with it. And I kept hoping that something was going to mount in those pictures. And I actually didn't recommend either of the first two Avengers films. Here, it boils over. There's some genuine conflict. I felt like there was something at stake. In those other films, I felt like, you know, it was basically just fireworks, you know, a lot of sparks. A lot of loud noises, and, you know, nothing really substantial. Here there's something substantial, not only in the plight of the characters, where you feel like there's something on the line, there's something on the line for the entire world in these pictures, but there's a little more depth. I enjoy politics, and there's that underlying, you know, political sensibility of, you know, should the Avengers be able to go in on their own unilaterally, or, you know, would the better course of action be to, you know, seek the advice and guidance and community, essentially, of other nations, regardless of whether it's right or wrong?
Okay. Yeah. I think that, to me, okay, so maybe I misspoke. I think Marvel can do no wrong, but I do have hesitations, I think, and I'm going to say it here. I think that the streak will end in their success. I have big concerns in November when Doctor Strange comes out. I feel like that character does not have the following to make it as successful as many of the other ones. Now, I say that, and people go, well, Guardians of the Galaxy is a fine example of, you know, you take a D-level superhero team, and they just went, you know, bonkers with. And it was very successful. It was a great movie. It was fun. Ant-Man, another example as well, where maybe not the A-level superhero. I just think this is a stretch, though, with Doctor Strange. I think you're going to deal with, you know, he's the master of mystical arts and the black arts and magic, and I think that's going to be too cerebral for Marvel to really drive home and have the success. I don't know. Granted, Benedict Cumberbatch will probably bring people to the theater. You know, I mean,
you think he's going to pack the house better than Cumberbatch?
You might be right. With a particular demographic, yes. Okay. I think women. Well, first of all, women will go see him because, from what I understand, many young ladies like Benedict Cumberbatch. You know, I mean, and okay. So I think he'll draw that. I hate to classify or stereotype folks, but those folks that are into British culture, you know, the Doctor Who people.
Yeah,
He'll draw them. I don't know if he'll draw the regular, you know, Joe and Betty on the street. You know what I mean? So I think that this one in November, just personally for me, I think Doctor Strange could be the one that ends the run.
I don't know enough about Doctor Strange. Okay. About Doctor Strange, about his underpinnings. But in general, for films... And, you know, leading off with Benedict Cumberbatch, from a superhero or comic book hero that I'm not familiar with, doesn't bode well for it box office-wise. you know, I might not be the core contingent here that is going to push this over the top. But the fact that I'm not familiar with Doctor Strange probably doesn't bode well for it being a box office hit. But where maybe it does succeed is if it's actually good. I mean, that's what I believe as a critic. If a film is really good, sometimes... people will go see it. Mm-hmm. They'll tell their friend. And it'll build up ahead of steam, you know, based on word of mouth. Mm-hmm. And I still think In a day of age of marketing and advertising and social media, actually social media would help a film that's actually good because mm-hmm. people get the word out. It's much easier sure. to get the word out.
Sure.
But I still think word of mouth is an important piece to a film succeeding. Okay. And if it's good, it'll do well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's get back to some of the summer blockbusters. X-Men Apocalypse. Did you see that one?
Yeah, I didn't care for it. I gave it a C+. It felt like one of the lesser installments. And this is when I thought the X-Men franchise was actually getting better. I gave a B to the previous one.
Yeah, I agree with you on that, too. I felt like there was just some things, especially with the character of Magneto, that just kind of was like very clunky in the way in which several scenes that he was involved in it that bothered me. I didn't think it was terrible, but I didn't love it either.
No, I just didn't care for it. It felt kind of, and this isn't how the X-Men series has played out outside of when they started their own little, for lack of a better term, features on each of the X-Men where they went off with Wolverine.
And, yeah.
Here, it felt really episodic that it was just, you know, it didn't build on the franchise. Mm-hmm. It was, oh, we're going to tell this one isolated story.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Marvel Pictures, that's all they've been doing
yeah.
is building the franchise.
Right.
So
right.
And I guess to a certain extent I wasn't overwhelmed by being episodic in nature doesn't destroy a film, doesn't make it bad. But in this instance I just found it less interesting, particularly when you're trying to crank in I don't know how many different X-Men that they devote time to, maybe
yes.
seven or eight.
Yes.
So
yes.
for a film that's episodic in nature and you have seven or eight characters that you're featuring, it's kind of all over the board.
Including 4 minutes of Wolverine, which made no sense whatsoever. He just was shoehorned in, and you talk about shoehorning Spider-Man into Captain America. This was a blatant one. Like, just he's randomly there.
Yeah, yeah. It felt like, hey, we need a cool cameo.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Well, though it's not technically one of the summer blockbusters, I think we've overlooked another big film, and that was, of course, Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice. Your thoughts on that film?
I didn't care for that one at all, and partially because it really wasn't Batman versus Superman. There's one fight scene, and even about maybe, I want to say midway through the fight scene, but the fight's so short because they realize once they're getting it on that, hey, wait a minute. There's yeah. something. You know, this is just a miscommunication here. Right. I mean, we would have sat down in a room before we started throwing punches, and you know, we could have resolved this. And that's what it felt like. It did not feel like Batman versus Superman. Unlike Captain America: Civil War, mm-hmm. where they're really going at it, and there's really something that's dividing the group. Here, it's just a Batman versus Superman. It's just a misunderstanding.
Yeah, and I felt that the fight scene was not very good, and I agree with you. It just seemed like it could have been over had they just talked about it. I did not like Jesse Eisenberg as Lex Luthor. I felt that performance was just awful. Just awful.
Yeah, Lex, in the past, he was much more humor. The character was much more humor-filled.
He's concise. He's in control. He's not a spaz.
Yeah, he seems, he seems more out of control. He just doesn't have Eisenberg doesn't have an intimidating presence.
No.
If anything, he's playing against type.
Right.
And he always plays kind of the more intimidated figure in all of his roles, and he's succeeded at that and done a terrific job. He's just a bad pick for this Lex.
Yes. But however, though, I will say that I feel that movie, though, to an extent, though, Paul, got a lot of unnecessary hate thrown at it. Like, when it came out, all over the internet, people were just blam-blasting it. I didn't think it was as bad as people made it out to be on the internet.
Well,
I mean,
as soon as they started casting Ben Affleck in the
role
of Batman, boom.
Right.
Social media hate was flying at Affleck. I thought he was fine in the picture. I don't
too.
Have a problem with Ben Affleck.
I agree. I think the three actors, Henry Cavill does a very good job as Superman,
yeah.
I think. Gail Gadot, I thought, did a fairly good job as being Wonder Woman.
She was alright. I mean, to me, it was kind of a hollow role, but she was fine. I mean, she had
right.
to have a presence on screen.
Right.
She delivered that.
Right. So, I didn't think that it was as awful as people made it out to be. But, you know, ultimately, I mean, I guess the masses speak on Twitter.
On Twitter, but the masses also spoke to a certain extent at the box office.
Mm-hmm.
It did really well.
Yeah.
week one, and then I want to say it had one of the biggest drops
I think
in cinematic history, box office wise. And again, that's because the word got out.
Sure.
That, you know,
sure.
They didn't think it was very good.
Okay. Maybe another big movie that is not a, again, one of the summer blockbusters, but one that did very well and was very good, Deadpool.
I enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it thoroughly. In fact, before you give your thoughts on it, I rate it as one of the greatest comic book movies ever.
Wow.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go there.
Okay. All right.
To be honest, I kind of thought the lead character of Deadpool himself mm-hmm. was much like the movie. I thought he was funny. I thought it was fun. And I found it to be forgettable.
Oh, really?
I mean, okay. I don't remember outside of a few jokes themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, I found it to be very funny. And I found it to be fresh for the Marvel franchise because... He's an anti-hero.
Right.
Sure. Everybody else they've been featuring is a hero in some mm-hmm. regards. Even Ant-Man, who, you know, had just been come out of prison, he's still a good guy.
Right.
Deadpool's not a good guy by any conventional standards.
Yes.
So I appreciated that. I appreciated, his sense of humor and, you know, how they inject that into it. I like how they throw some pop culture references in there.
Oh, yeah. Well. Yeah, yeah. I think that, to me, I think of it based on the experience from talking to some other coworkers and whatnot. I'm a huge Deadpool fan, so I appreciated that he stuck a lot to the way the book is.
Okay.
So I felt that was awesome. But other people who have no idea who Deadpool is enjoyed the film. Right. They enjoyed the film. So to me, I think that's what puts it in that category of great comic book movies. You have done both, you know. You've given the comic book geeks what they want, and they're happy. You've given the general public who know nothing about the character what they want, and they're happy. And I think that when you can do that, I think you have to consider it to be one of the greats in that genre of superhero movies.
I just, again, there isn't any one moment that stands out in the picture.
Okay.
I didn't think it necessarily had a great ending or a great climax. just the general flow of his mentality and the mentality of the film itself, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that twist of tone, that, you know, twisted sensibility that sticks through. I mean, to me, otherwise, it felt like a normal, you know, your average
action film.
Normal action Marvel comic book film, but I really enjoyed the twist.
Yeah. So what other things from this summer blockbuster? Let's get back onto the summer blockbusters here, because are the two that I saw with Captain America and X-Men.
One, and it doesn't get lumped in to the summer blockbuster season. It came out in April. It certainly it played like a blockbuster film. A lot of action, huge special effects, a lot of fun. Made a ton of money, but people don't remember it and they don't include it in the summer blockbuster season, is The Jungle Book.
Right, which was directed by Jon Favreau, correct?
Yeah.
Who has done Daredevil and a few other of those action-oriented films. So, you liked it.
Yeah, it's very exciting. It's fun, it's fast moving, and it feels real. And the whole film's pretty much CGI. I think my guess would be about 95% of it's CGI, but there's not for a minute when you're racing through the jungle, or he's swinging from vine to vine, or he's getting chased by King Louis. This film feels real, and it's you know, one of the more fun films of the summer.
Oh, okay. I did not check it out. Just because it's one of those ones on the list to see sometime. You know, it wasn't a rush out and see.
But thing is, it really has a big screen feel to it.
Really?
Like, you know, unless you're watching it on and a lot of people have these, you know, the 65 screen.
Yeah, 65-inch screen. Yeah, right.
Even if you're watching it on that, King Louis is not as big on a 65-inch screen as opposed to a, 30-foot screen.
Right.
Yeah. You know?
Right.
So.
All right, what about Independence Day, Resurgence? Okay.
Yeah, never, it's
I
not,
not
good.
Have
I mean,
that.
This is a dud. it plays exactly like the first film.
Okay.
With no personality.
Oh. See, I had interest in seeing it because I like the original one.
I enjoyed the original one to a certain extent.
And I appreciate the fact that they didn't try to reboot it, that they just said, okay, it's happening 20 years after the first one. Like reality, real time.
Yeah, but I mean,
that it just falls apart.
It doesn't really fall apart. It's just, it's not interesting. It plays almost exactly like the first film.
Oh.
It's it recollects back to the first film so much. They should have rebooted it, to be honest with you. It's outside of Will Smith, who appears in the film briefly in a picture frame. I mean, that's it. There's more personality coming from Will Smith in the picture frame than there is from any of the characters.
Wow. Okay.
It needed a star. This film needed a star.
Okay. So wow.
It doesn't. It's hey, look at the, you know, this character. We're bringing him back from the first film. Here he is. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. There's a lot of that going on.
Wow.
It's
okay.
It's yeah,
so
I gave
what
it a
I've
D
heard
plus.
Is true is it's not good.
It's terrible.
Okay. Enough said. all right, what else is on the list for any time in the last 6 months?
I'll tell you the best, if you're talking big films.
Sure.
One that pretty much flopped. I think it had aspirations of being really big. And then another one that turned out to be pretty big, that is more mainstream, Central Intelligence. Very funny.
That's the one that you thought had good aspirations and reached
and succeeded,
them,
yes.
And succeeded, okay.
Yeah, and then the one which completely flopped, and to be honest, of all the big screen films, I'm looking down my list here, of all the big blockbuster mainstream films, to me this is the best picture so far this year of the big mainstream ones, is the BFG, which is Steven Spielberg,
right.
A young London orphan that meets a big friendly giant.
Yeah, so that it was good.
Yeah, I thought it was terrific. It's quirky, it's funny, it's real adventuresome. It really does a terrific job playing off the size differences in both instances.
Okay.
It kind of feels like a Honey, I Shrunk the Kids vibe to it. When the little orphan, her name's Sophie, when she goes to the giant country is what they call it.
Okay.
And then, of course, there's a scene later on, which is terrific, one of my favorite scenes of the year, when the big friendly giant comes to London and meets the Queen of England. And, of course, they're adapting him, his big structure, you know, being...
His frame and
whatnot.
Yeah,
his frame
and
whatnot, into the palace. Okay. So it's a lot of fun.
Why do you think it didn't do very well at the box office? Do you think it was marketing?
There's no name stars.
Okay.
There's no name stars in it. It's sandwiched in between Dory and it comes out the week in between Finding Dory and The Secret Life of Pets.
Mm-hmm.
So to a certain extent, there's only so much time and money that can be thrown at films, and I think those are easier sells because they're completely animated. The BFG is a more simple, it's literally and figuratively a darker picture.
Mm-hmm. And Central Intelligence, you said, was funny. It was very good.
Yeah.
And it reached the expectation, which I'm not surprised by, because I think that Dwayne The Rock Johnson is becoming, if not, well, I mean, they just said the other day he's the highest paid actor this past year. Forbes magazine said that.
Wow. That surprises me to a certain extent.
$64 million is what he's made in the past year.
Wow. And most of his films, I don't think have done. They haven't been huge successes. He must just have a consistent, you know, hey, we're gonna pay him $64 million, because just by putting him in the picture, we're going to make 125.
Yeah.
But and maybe this is because most of his films I haven't cared for. I like him in most of the movies.
Yeah.
But I really thought he was going to blow up and be huge after The Rundown.
Oh, yeah.
Which I really
enjoyed.
This came out,
yeah.
I don't know how many years now. Maybe
probably
8 to 10 years.
Yeah, or maybe.
It was a while ago. And there's a scene at the beginning of The Rundown, which I love, where it's a bar scene. And literally, when he gets done roughing up all the bad guys and taking them out, he literally, it's not a torch, but he has something passed to him from Schwarzenegger in the picture. And that was the proverbial passing of the torch from the one once great action star to the next one.
Yeah.
And I think The Rundown's really good. And it wasn't until, I think this is the highest grade I've given for a film that he's been in and starred in since The Rundown, is Central Intelligence.
Well, and I think he's got an HBO project. He's had Ballers, which is that TV show. So
I'm sure that's built his brand.
Yeah, that's built his brand. He's branching out to other things. But I was not surprised that Central Intelligence was good, because I think that he has that comedy in his, just in his essence, you know, of who he is. He's kind of got that self-deprecating humor at times. He's a funny guy. He's electrifying, as he used to say in the WWE. You know, so I'm not surprised that is good, and I'm not surprised that it did, you know, as well as it did at the box office.
Yeah, but his character is something completely unique in Central Intelligence.
Oh, is it? Okay.
That we haven't seen
before. That's right, because he was the fat kid in high school, and then he's
And the thing is, in the picture, he's the fat kid in high school, and even though he's become muscled up and is this, you know, kind of Central Intelligence agent gone rogue, he still has the fat guy underneath him, and he's real humble, and he's lovable, and he's sincere, and he's a loving guy in the picture. And you contrast that with Kevin Hart, who was the real popular guy in high school, and he hasn't quite made it, but he still has this kind of manic energy in him. Mm-hmm. The contrast between the two works really well. It's funny, but you also have it, and you don't get this in a lot of these buddy cop films, even if you're getting the humor and the action, you're not getting a real sense that you're pulling for the characters and there's really something on the line and you really emphasize and sympathize with this guy. And you feel bad for him, and you really want him to win in the end, and it was refreshing to see that they were willing to go this far with this character that we have never seen and normally audiences aren't pulled into.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Speaking of a buddy cop movie, I saw The Nice Guys just a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Did you like it?
Yeah, I liked it quite a bit.
Okay. I liked it, too. There were, I don't know, I guess to me, I expected a little more comedy to it. Like, I thought it
was that funny?
There was parts I thought was funny.
What
but
about the
I
bathroom scene?
Oh, the bathroom scene was pretty good.
All right.
Okay, I like that one. I personally enjoyed the part about and stuff. Honey, don't say and stuff. You know, like, I enjoyed that part.
Yeah, that was
funny.
Good. That's a nice ongoing
that
joke.
That was good. I thought it was all right. I don't know. I guess I was a little bit let down because I had very high aspirations for it. I've heard very, very good things about it. I didn't think it was terrible. I thought both the Russell Crowe and Ryan Gosling did a very good job in it. Keith David being in it is also, I don't know why. Just Keith David, ever since seeing him in Requiem for a Dream, he scares me. I know that's not his persona, but his character from that movie, every time he shows up on screen, I'm like, ugh. Like, I get the, you know. So I liked it. I wish there was a little bit more comedy to it, I guess is my bottom line on that.
Okay. I thought it was really funny. I like Gosling in it a lot, and I think it goes to show how well-rounded of an actor he is.
Yeah.
Normally he's doing more independent stuff,
yes,
darker, more dramatic. I mean, here he's just a nut.
Yes.
And he's such a buffoon. And not only does he play it well with the dialogue and playing off Crow's, you know, tough straight guy, there's a lot of physical humor. The bathroom scene that we talk about, that's just a lot of slapstick. But he plays it extremely well. I mean, the timing, you know, couldn't be better there.
Yeah. Like I said, solid film. I will give it that. I liked it. I just kind of had higher expectations for it, so... I will tell you, here's a movie that I had high expectations for, and it met them. Midnight Special.
That would be my number one pick right now for the year.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought it was phenomenal.
I didn't include that as the BFG, because I prefaced my BFG comments by saying this is the best mainstream picture of the year.
Yes.
Midnight Special, to me, is the best film of the year.
Right, because it did not get a big push. It was very kind of under the radar, you know. I don't think it got much marketing behind it. I can only think of maybe... 6 times I saw a commercial for it.
Yeah, I mean, it was a smaller movie. The funny thing is it plays like 2 Spielberg films meshed into one.
Yes.
In some regards. I really like that aspect of it. Mm-hmm. The kind of mysterious ending didn't bother me. I didn't need all these things to be concrete and defined.
Mm-hmm.
What I appreciated is that it was essentially this one family's faith journey into the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it stays consistent with that.
Yes.
I think it's very, very moving.
It's great. I think it's a unique twist on that same science fiction idea about the kid with special powers. I thought it was a unique twist. Joel Edgerton, I thought, did a phenomenal job in his role. And in fact, I think that, because I'm going to mention another movie on my list that got no time in the theater, as far as I'm aware of, here in Columbus, Jane Got a Gun. He is in that, the Natalie Portman Western. I think Joel Edgerton's becoming one of my favorites. I mean, he just does a pretty darn good job with whatever role he's given.
Well, and he's carved out a certain niche. He's kind of the, and he does it in Jane Got a Gun, which I just thought was all right.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you. I will say that. It could have been better, but it wasn't bad for what it was, you know.
But he's carved out this niche where whether he's doing a Western or not, he still plays kind of the stoic, silent type that comes in to kind of save the day. And his role in Midnight Special, I think, is, although he might not get the accolades or the noteworthiness of Michael Shannon or Kirsten Dunst because they play the two parents of the young boy.
Yes.
His is even more important. He's taking even a great... I mean, the whole film is basically a leap of faith by everyone's part.
Right.
They're doing it for their child. He's doing it because he believes what he's doing is just.
Right.
What he's doing is right.
Right.
What he's being led by something greater than himself.
Mm-hmm. And I think he just drives at home in Midnight Special. Like, just the way... You know, because they even set it up that he doesn't know Michael Shannon's character very well. You know, I think that they know each other.
Right,
like,
he's a friend from high school.
He's a friend from high school, right.
It's been
kind
of distant because Shannon's
gone into that cult.
Yes.
Yeah, and I agree. And I think that's what really his performance really drove home how good that movie was. And I didn't think it needed $100 million of worth of special effects either to just drive home.
No, but what they use is pretty impressive.
Yes.
There's kind of this, it's not really a meteor shower. I don't want to go into
too
much of it to give it away. But there's a scene that is fairly explosive and majestic at the same time. At that convenience store when they're pumping gas. And, you're right. They didn't need a big budget to be able to create these kind of mystical and magical special effects.
Yeah, it was excellent. Another one that I have on my list, Zootopia, which came out in February, which was a fun film. I thought, again, it was unique. I think it was the first time I had been in a theater with a lot of children before.
Okay.
I mean, because, I look at the list, there's not a lot of kids going to see some of the films I see.
Right, they're not going to see The Nice Guys.
No, they're not, no, exactly. or they shouldn't be going to see The Nice Guys, but I digress.
Right.
Did you like Zootopia?
Yeah, I liked it quite a bit, and I am accustomed to having two little girls. I took Bab and my wife to see the sneak of that one, and I liked it quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
It plays to a certain extent like some of the old Warner Brothers Bugs Bunny scenes with the action.
Okay.
I thought it was a great scene. It's one of the first scenes we see of Bunny Hops on the force.
Mm-hmm.
Or Judy Hops, sorry.
Yes.
Where she races into, I'm not sure if they're mice or they're squirrels, where she's kind of pursuing a thief.
Yes.
The weasel.
Yes. Yeah.
Through the small, and I think it's a mouse village. And, she's skating on these buses and trying to avoid the mice from crushing them, trying to capture the weasel, trying not to destroy the town.
Yeah.
And it plays with a lot of excitement and ingenuity. And then, of course, it also plays as kind of this film noir, where
it's got a little bit of hints of that.
It builds the mystery and, you have these darker kind of, gangster bad guys. And then, of course, there's the overarching themes of, false stereotypes and that playing into, how we react and interact with, various individuals in our own lives.
So, speaking of other animated films, I'm sure you saw Finding Dory.
I did.
And Secret Life of Pets.
Yes.
What were your thoughts on those two films?
I enjoyed both. Dory a little bit more than The Secret Life of Pets. Dory doesn't come close to touching its predecessor, Finding Nemo. and I think that's in large part due to the fact that much of Dory exists out of water.
Okay.
So where Nemo not only, no pun intended here, depth-wise. It doesn't play as substantial, but also you're immersed in Nemo because the entire film almost, and there's the, I don't know, maybe about a quarter of the picture takes place with Nemo in the aquarium and in the dentist's office. But it's an immersive experience. You're in the ocean. You feel like you're kind of floating around and you're on this adventure. Most of Dory, to be honest, is out of the water.
Okay.
They're at this aquarium in, I think they're in California in the picture.
Okay.
And a lot of it's about... Marlin and Nemo trying to get to Dory. And they're being transported out of water to get into the aquarium. Bottom line, it's a lot more action packed, but it's not quite as moving thematically.
Okay, and Secret Life of Pets kind of indifferent on, or
I give it a marginal recommendation with a B-.
Okay,
some
of the problems with it, if you don't mind me
asking? It's kind of a Toy Story ripoff.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, the fact that there's a pet.
Yeah.
That is enjoying his own life with his owner. And then, boom, another pet moves into his turf, and that disrupts it.
Okay.
And then they both get thrust out of their environment from the apartment into downtown New York City, and it's about them returning to the apartment again.
You know, funny, you mentioned it real quick. You mentioned that, you know, obviously Dory does not hold up to Nemo or doesn't surpass
it. No, but to be honest, it's almost not fair. It's almost not fair to compare any Pixar film to what the brand has been built, because those Pixar films have been great. I gave Finding Dory a B.
Okay.
I gave Nemo an A. I had that at the top of my list. I think it was 2002. I think it was 2002.
I think so. Yeah.
That was at the top of my list. So it's hard to keep reaching the standards that they've set for themselves.
And I think, too, not that this is a sequel. Kind of, I guess.
Finding Dory is a sequel. Yeah, it's a sequel.
I think it's hard for the sequel to beat the original.
Yes. Right?
In fact, and funny when you were mentioning that, the only...
Toy Story 2 did it.
Yeah, well, and I was just going to say, most recently, I was at my cousin's house, I watched it on DVD, Dredd beats the original Judge Dredd. I felt that the new one with Carl Urban was very well done. I mean, it's an action film, there's not much plot, but it moves. It's pedal to the metal, bang, 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 there's no dryness like there was with Judge Dredd and the Stallone version of it. So that just rang in my head when you were talking about sequels and trying to, you know, have the sequel top the original one.
And we're having more of that happen in the Pixar world.
Okay.
And I don't know they're certainly not bone dry on ideas. As Inside Out, I would say next to Up, I would put that number 2 on my list of Pixar films.
Okay.
So they're not tap dry on ideas. But you're seeing more of that. Okay. There was, of course, Cars 2, which to me is the only black mark on the Pixar record. and then you had Monsters University, which I enjoyed, but again, it didn't reach the levels of Monsters Incorporated.
Agreed.
And you have that again with Dory.
Dory. All right. I'm going to throw out that I actually, we talked off air, you were talking a little bit about Kappa. There's a couple films that I want to touch on that I've just seen that I've never seen before. But what other do you have on the list that you want to talk about real quick for current picks, if you will?
Here's a real offbeat one, and it's not really science fiction.
Okay.
I don't know how to classify it, and I guess that's one of the things I really like about it. I guess it's societal fiction. It's called The Lobster. It had Colin Farrell, Rachel Weisz, John C. Reilly. Completely original picture where you're not sure when it feels like the near future, where everyone essentially has to have a mate.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have a mate, you go to this hotel or reservation, whatever you want to call it. I mean, they live in a hotel.
Yeah.
Right. And they're there and they have to find a mate within a certain amount of time. And if they don't find their mate within, I think it's 38 days. Then they have to turn into their animal of choice.
Yes, yes. I've seen previews for this, and it looks out there. It looks really bizarre.
Yeah, it's dark, it's very funny, and it's really a scathing critique on the various perceptions of how we see ourselves in relationships or the impact of relationships on the individual. It's a very well-rounded picture.
Okay, all right.
And it's got a terrific ending.
Okay, all right. Some other items? Anything else on your list there?
I'm trying to think. Sing Street. You were talking about...
I've heard of that, and I don't think I've ever seen a preview for it, though. But tell us a little bit. What's the...
It comes from the writer-director of Once and Begin Again.
Oh, okay.
They're all music-themed pictures.
Okay.
And this one's set in the mid-80s in Ireland/England. It's an Irish young man who falls for... His parents are in the midst of getting a divorce.
Mm-hmm.
He's just been enlisted at a private school for boys, and he falls for this girl that hangs outside the school.
Oh, okay.
And he decides he's going to put together a band to impress the girl.
Oh, yes, okay. I did see a preview for that, now that you mentioned that. Because isn't Bill Nighy in that? Am I correct or no?
No, it would seem like he would be in something like that.
Somebody I thought that I recognized was in it. I can't remember now. But I did see a preview for that, I think, before. I'm trying to think what it might have been. It might have been before Midnight Special.
Anyone that's a child of the 80s should at least find some humor, if not completely enjoying the musical sequences in the picture.
Okay.
And anyone that is either teenage level or has once been a teenager should be able to enjoy and recollect back to the time when you were a teen and, you know, you're going through your own, you know, finding yourself
right.
and, you know, falling for the girl, you know.
Yeah.
And they do a nice job with the teenage girl in the picture, too, and making her well-rounded and sharp and intelligent and kind of unique in her own way,
That's
too.
Good. That's good. I throw out these next couple were Netflix original. Well, not originals, but Netflix movies. I watched, and they're all three documentaries, too. So The Shark is Still Working from 2006, I believe. It's the Jaws documentary.
Okay.
Where they talk a lot about the trouble making that film. Not bad. Have you ever seen that one? Or
I haven't. I'm a huge Jaws fan, too, so maybe that's something I'll need to check out.
Yeah, it was interesting. I think it could have been an hour. It's 90 minutes. It could have been an hour. Because I think they start to dive into, you know, Jaws impacted Shark Week. Okay. And then they go on and talk about Shark Week, and I'm like, I don't care. That's, you know, that's not...
Right, the focus should remain on Jaws.
Right.
And then, to be honest, with Jaws, there should be enough material there.
Right.
I mean, it is a classic, and there's even some backstory with, you know, Bruce himself.
Yes,
you know,
and the movie's all about Bruce and how much of a debacle it was that, you know, he wouldn't work, and they had to... You know, constantly was breaking down, and they actually, I believe, started filming before they even had the shark done yet. And it was fascinating. It was pretty good. I just wish that last, say, half hour, they could have just glossed over and stayed focused on the film. Of course, being the big wrestling fan that I am, I enjoyed The Resurrection of Jake the Snake Roberts. I really honestly think that film, you don't have to be a wrestling fan. It's basically about his turning his life around from being somebody that was having problems with booze and substance abuse and that, and turning his life around and pretty much saving his own life because it probably was heading down that avenue that so many old pro wrestlers end up and dying way too young. So it was really good.
Did he have the downward spiral before he hit the WWF, or was this after?
No, this is after the WWF.
Okay.
This is after. Yeah, so it's been well documented that he has had a lot of problems, you know, over the last, say, about 16 years or so. And another wrestler actually takes him under his wing and see the dynamic of them, you know, trying to be friends, but also still being responsible, you know, and holding Jake accountable for when he falls down. It was a really good film. I thought it could be something that even a non-wrestling fan would enjoy.
No cameos by Damian, though.
No. Damien's not there. No snake. Right. Sorry. the other one, too, and this is the last one, and this is the one that I talked about on this podcast, too, but I found it amazing. Electric Boogaloo, The Wild Untold Story of Canon Films. It's a documentary that, oh my goodness, it's just amazing. If you love movies, I think you'd check it out. Remember Canon Films? They're responsible for Over the Top, Missing in Action 2, Breakin' 2, Electric Boogaloo, Invasion
right,
of
I was
USA,
wondering when you said Electric Boogaloo, I'm not sure.
It's all of those films. Just amazing that those two individuals behind it, just the way that they made films, they had so many hits and so many epic failures, like just the way that they just took Hollywood by storm was really interesting. It's a fascinating documentary. If you only get a chance to watch one thing on Netflix in the next couple weeks, make sure it's that.
Okay, I'll definitely put that one on my radar.
Yeah, so it was good.
Because it's a movie about movies.
Yes, it is. And just, they put out 40 films a year. Who does that? even in modern times, people don't do that, you know?
Right.
Studios are good if they can get 6 out or 8, you know, not 40. Yeah, so that's just, there you go. That's all you need to know. 40 films in a year.
Electric Boogaloo, again.
The Wild Untold Tale of Canon Films.
That's a long title.
It is a very long title, but it's well worth it. It was fascinating. Other movies that you, I know you got your list there, that any that we didn't touch on there before we talk about maybe upcoming ones that are coming out?
There's one horror film that I think, and it's another indie film, and then there's one that's, it's a horror film in its own right. It plays more of a thriller, but in some regards, it's horrifying. The small one, which kind of has a strong following, it's called The Witch.
I've heard good things about it.
Yeah, it's terrific, and it's odd. I guess what I really liked about it, it's set during a different time period. It's set, you know, hundreds of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That it's not conventional by any stretch of the imagination. Most horror films these days, you can kind of feel the measures and the clicks, and they're all kind of following the same, beat to the same drummer. This one feels completely unique, and it's got its own rules. It sticks by the rules, and I don't know, it's really out there.
Okay.
So if you're looking for something a little off the beaten path, it's frightening, and you're not really sure where this film's going.
Okay.
The Witch is all right. The Witch is the one you want to see.
What about the other one that you said that was a horror movie, but it kind of played more like a drama?
Actually, it's a thriller that is kind of horror filled. Is 10 Cloverfield Lane?
Oh yeah. Okay. You really dug that one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Elizabeth Winstead is. You see her driving. She gets in a car accident. At the beginning of the film, what you believe is a car accident at the beginning of the film, and she wakes up in this bunker with two men, and one of the men, played by John Goodman, tells her that, it's basically the end of civilization. You need to stay down here in the bunker with me, and it goes from there. And I'm a huge Lost fan. The film was produced by J.J. Abrams, who created Lost. And it has this whole sensibility. Anyone that's a Lost fan out there, you feel like you're back down in season 2 of Lost in the Hatch.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about a few movies that are coming up, because there's still the summer's not over. There's still quite a few blockbusters are coming out. I think the next two are coming out within a week or so. Star Trek Beyond is set to come out, I believe, the end of July, as is Ice Age Collision Course. Well, what are your thoughts on those two flicks?
The Ice Age series I'm kind of done with.
Okay.
It's still on the radar because I have two young girls, so we're going to go see Ice Age, but they kind of feel like the same movie over and over again. I kind of wish they'd just have a series of shorts with Scratch. That would be fine with me.
Yes, that would be cool.
Those are always the best part of the Ice Age films.
Star Trek Beyond?
Star Trek Beyond. Again, I have hope because it's an Abrams-produced film. That being said, he's not directing this one. This one's directed by Justin Lin of... I think he did a couple of the Fast and Furious films.
Yes. I hope they do something with this one, because I think that the first one was good. I think the last one was not very good at all.
Yeah, I would agree. I wouldn't say not very good at all, but I didn't give it a pass. The first one
was good.
I enjoyed it. I gave it a B. I thought it was a good reboot for the series. The second one, not very memorable at all, to be honest.
No. All I remember is it was a series of unfortunate events that happened, Like, it was, three.
Yes.
Then I'm like, there's no plot. It's just three random happenstances that occur, and So I think this one, I hope they do something with.
It looks like they're going to get into a little more of the character of Kirk himself, and maybe some of the struggles that he has, and I think that'll be a little more interesting.
Yeah. Jason Bourne is back at it at the end of the month
And more importantly, Matt Damon.
Yeah, right. That's right.
He's back at it.
We
took a detour into Jeremy Renner land,
and
it didn't play as well.
Julia Stiles, too, because she's in it.
Yes.
Where's she been? I haven't seen her.
Well, someone would say, where was she in the first two Jason
Bourne
films?
Well, that's true, but I mean, recently, the last couple of years, I haven't seen her in any pictures. Have you?
No, it was kind of refreshing. She's one of the childhood stars that actually took a different course as opposed to, turning into a tabloid sensation and her career going down the tubes.
Yeah.
She went to school.
Oh, okay. So, she went to college as well. She's been gone for a while.
She went for 4 years to, schooling, and she's had a hard time kind of getting back into, and maybe this is why a lot of the childhood stars, maybe to their detriment personally, but professionally, they keep their careers going. She, kind of diverted to, focus on her studies and, she's had a hard time getting back into the film industry.
So are you excited for Jason Bourne with Matt Damon back in it, or?
I'm not revved up about it. I'm sure it'll be good with the addition of Damon and Stiles coming back into the fold. So I'm looking forward of it from that aspect.
Okay.
I'm more interested into the one film that I thought you were going to allude to that comes out here on Friday. And is the reboot, and it's gotten a lot of hate on Twitter, is Ghostbusters.
Oh, yes. Well, I'm kind of refraining from it because I'm not a huge Melissa McCarthy fan to begin with. I'm just going to throw it out there. There's something about her that I don't find her funny. I don't know why that is. I don't know if it's because Mike and Molly was essentially just, hey, we're two overweight people, and every joke was that. I don't know. So I, to be honest, I don't have an opinion one way or the other. Okay. I don't think it's going to be as good as the original. But let's be honest, Ghostbusters 2 was not very good.
Never saw Ghostbusters 2. To be honest with you, I enjoyed the first Ghostbusters. The first time I saw it, when I saw it in the 80s, we did it on Now Playing as our DVD pick. Again, I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a travesty that they're remaking it, because, to be honest, I didn't find the first one to be a classic. I enjoyed it, but, I mean, to me, it was kind of a passing fancy. It's another one of those comedies where Bill Murray's in it, and the reason why it succeeds is because Bill Murray's in it.
But it has gotten bad reviews from at least from one particular critic that I read online, that it's just kind of not very funny. And that, you know, Chris Hemsworth is in it, but doesn't add anything to the to his particular role. It's very one-dimensional from what I hear he is. I'm not crying over the fact that they remade it. I am a little bit tired of just taking retreads and redoing it, because I know they're doing it, you know what I mean? Like, just redoing. I think they're doing another, is it The Mechanic? I think they're doing that, another reboot of that. Or no, it's is it The Mechanic or is it The Transporter? One of those Jason Statham films I think they're redoing.
Okay.
So I'm like...
I will agree that Hollywood has a serious problem in the creativity department recently.
Yes.
Where a lot of it... Some of them are good.
Yes.
But it's basically sequels and remakes. Mm-hmm. And we've even talked about some here that I've enjoyed.
Yeah.
We both like... Sure. I mean, the Star Wars, you know, is a constant series.
That's terrific. We'll tell you, I almost had a heart attack because while going through trailers today, I was like, wait, Blood Simple? Well, I found out they're just re-releasing it for the anniversary. The Coen brothers. I'm like, they're not remaking Blood Simple, are they? I almost, it's like, no, never mind. Because then when you clicked on it, I was like, never mind. So yeah, I mean, Ghostbusters, I don't know. We'll see. Again, it wasn't one of my favorite movies. So, you know.
It will be big, though.
Yeah, it
will be big regardless.
Oh, sure. Yeah, most definitely will. Suicide Squad, which is one that I'm curious about, as being the comic book geek that I am. So I think I'm looking forward to that. I think it's going to be kind of DC's dark, kind of R-rated version, even though I don't think it's R-rated. I think it's PG-13. But it's going to be that their edgy Deadpool, if you will, I think. Is what they're going to go with.
I mean,
that.
Certainly it plays as more humor-filled and definitely, like Deadpool is, kind of off the beaten path of what we're accustomed to either in the DC or Marvel worlds.
Right.
I'm curious to see it just because it looks like something different.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. The Magnificent Seven, speaking of remakes, that's coming out in September. So, done by Antoine Fuqua, I believe, the guy that did Training Day. So, any thoughts on the remake of Magnificent Seven? Chris Pratt is in it, so, you know.
Yeah, I would say he, more than anybody now, I think is building a following and, you know, is in essence building the box office for these studios. And I think if you put Chris Pratt in your film, it's going to go a long way.
You know, so, I mean, that's a tag team if Hollywood needed one.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we talked about Star Wars, so let's maybe wrap this up here with Star Wars. Rogue One comes out at the end of the year, which is kind of the standalone film that happens between, what is it, New Hope and Empire?
It's one of those side stories, isn't it?
So what are your thoughts on that?
I think it's probably going to feel like a side story.
I think it
really feels like a money grab to me.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm trying to think who the big star is, and
Star, but I don't remember.
There's a star in there. I can't remember either, and I think that probably says something about maybe not as much about the star, but about your or my excitement towards the film.
Yeah.
Again, it just kind of feels like it's trying to take advantage of the franchise.
Yeah, exactly.
And Star Wars fans will get revved up because it'll wet the palate before Episode 8 comes out.
Sure. All right, so as we get close to that hour mark here, I'm just going to throw out a couple of films that I've recently seen that, quite frankly, I kind of am embarrassed about one, saying that I've never seen it before. But recently, Double Indemnity, playing down at the Ohio Theater.
Yeah.
Very good film. Excellently done in terms of the film noir and just a phenomenal tale and a great, great movie.
Well, and Kappa does a great job.
Yes, they do.
With their selection.
They do.
And they're always good at picking out a variety of Hitchcock films.
Yes.
So,
in fact, I was just down there last night for Mad Max 2, The Road Warrior. So that was, being a big Mad
that
Max
was it.
Fan.
That was, that's part of the Kappa Summer movie?
That was. One showing only. And I will just be honest, the crowd was not, there's not a big crowd. But again, they don't let kids in when it's a rated R film. You know, they don't like kids. They got a strict policy on that.
Oh, okay.
A Wednesday night, you know, there wasn't a very big crowd for it. But I enjoyed seeing it on the big screen. Never seen it on the big screen. And huge fan. The other one that that I ventured down there, and this is the one I'm kind of embarrassed to admit to. I've never seen Patton. And so...
And neither have I.
Really?
Well, and to be honest, I refuse to see Patton on television. I'm not going to watch it on the small screen.
Okay.
And there have been a minimal number of opportunities for me to see it on the big screen, and for one reason or the other, my schedule hasn't matched up with the the screenings that are playing here.
Because it's 3 hours and 20 minutes, first of all.
There's that. But yes, that is one that is that I need to see. Actually, I can check this off. I'm fairly embarrassed to admit that another classic that I have waited, and I'm glad, because it came to the Gateway Film Center in 70mm. It's shown here several times before. Again, my schedule didn't match up with it. Is 2001: A Space Odyssey.
Oh, okay.
So I finally got to see that, and wow, that was as impressive as I had pictured it in my mind.
Yeah, because I've only seen that on the small screen on the TV, HBO, I think. But Patton was really good. I really enjoyed. And you're right. Seeing it on the big screen. I mean, I've never even seen it on the small screen, but still, that added to it. It was a very good, very well done, and I enjoyed it. So. Looking forward to catching a few others down there, because I know they have another World War II epic down there. We're Eagles Dare, which I believe is a Clint Eastwood film from 1968 that I'm looking forward to seeing. I'm hoping to get down there to catch that. And they got Blazing Saddles coming up.
All right, yeah, they're always good for a Brooks and a Marx Brothers in there
yes,
somewhere.
Yes, they are, they are. And speaking of films that will never be remade, I'm sure Blazing Saddles is on that list. Probably
I still never say never with Hollywood and their ability to tap into anything.
How about this? They will never make it as controversial as the original.
Well, yes, yeah, you're right. There are some things that would not play as well in 2016 that did
in the 70s.
How many years ago? Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
4 years ago.
So. Any other films you want to talk about real quick as we start to wrap things up? Did we overlook any other big films? I mean, I overlooked Ghostbusters.
I don't know if there are any other big ones.
Well, any other films you wanted to chat about?
I enjoyed Popstar. I was surprised. I enjoyed Popstar, Never Stop. Never
Stop.
Stop
Stopping?
Never...
Isn't that what it's
I'm
called?
Not even, I don't even remember the title. But
yeah, and that's the movie from the Lonely Island guys, correct?
Andy Samberg. I enjoyed it enough that we decided to take another look at. Mark took another look at my co-host Mark Pfeiffer on Now Playing, and I decided he took another look, and I took a first look at Hot Rod, which came out 10 years ago.
Yes,
very funny stuff. So, you know, I'm hoping Samberg still gets a few more vehicles to work with.
Yeah,
but
all right.
Popstar, pretty good.
Okay, all right. Well, with that being said, you just mentioned it, Now Playing, is on WOCC TV3 for those that get that station.
Yes,
you
in
know,
Western Ohio.
We did talk, and if you're new to the podcast, we did talk about it the last time you were here. And by the way, feel free to go back into the archives and listen to the other two appearances of Paul. But nonetheless, it's a spotty reception, if you will, in terms of where someone
WOCC
TV.
A little bit geographic.
A little bit geographic. There's some challenges there, but if you do get it, when is it on? When is it Now Playing?
Well, I mean, it's kind of like SportsCenter. it airs multiple times on multiple days. So it's on Monday to, you know, it's on Sunday to Sunday to Saturday. various times.
Enough said.
Check your local listings.
There you go. All right. Do you have anything you want to plug, social media wise, or anything like that, or no?
Now, I'm on Facebook and Twitter, but I don't post much. I enjoy listening to others.
Okay. All right. Well, with that being said, Paul, thanks for coming on again, man.
Thanks for having me again.
You're quite welcome. All right. With that, we're done talking about movies, so I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of that break, I'm going to be back to wrap up this episode.
Wow, that was a lot of movie talk, wasn't it? Well, I hope you enjoyed the opinions and insights of Mr. Paul Markoff and yours truly talking about movies on this episode of the PVDcast. As we mentioned towards the tail end of our conversation, Now Playing is still on the air. It's on WOCC-TV3 here in Westerville. Paul and Mark, his co-hosts, they talk about movies. And it's, as he said, it's like SportsCenter. It's always on that channel. It's a shame that more people don't get Otterbein's television station. But North End of Columbus and Westerville, you definitely can't pick it up. It's unfortunate that they don't have some way to stream that. But nonetheless, Now Playing, WOCC-TV3. Check it out if you get the opportunity to do so. With that being said, I would like to talk real quickly about the man that was on this podcast just an episode ago, or a couple episodes ago, I should say, Terry W. Irvin II. As you know, he has created some great science fiction and fantasy novels, and if you'd like to check them out, all you gotta do is go over to his own website, irvin-author.com. That's ervin-author.com. Terry's got links to where you can purchase his books, such as Relic Hunted, Flank, Hawk, Blood Sword, Soul Forge, Genre Shotgun, Relic Tech, etc., etc. Go on over there, check out where you can pick up his books. In fact, also read his blog, because yours truly has a nice little profile. He kind of did a little interview with me for his blog, and his blog, of course, is upandaroundthecorner.blogspot.com. But if you say, "I don't know, John, what the heck you just said?" Well, it's real simple. Just go over to his website. That's ervin-author.com, and there's a link right there to his blog. You can read up about the questions that he asked me. It was a great time to sit down and do that little interview with Terry and have the tables turned on me somewhat, if you will. But hey, if you forget that website, all you got to do is simply just go over to the links page on pvdcast.com. There's a link to Terry's website, as well as a link to all of my guest sites. Simply just go on over to pvdcast.com, hit the tab that says links, and there you go. There they are. Well, with that, we got that all out of the way, so let's get on into it. It's time for Orlando's Fave. My fave for this episode of the PVDcast is an Instagram account that has kept me very, very entertained. And that Instagram account belongs to the DDT Pro Iron Man heavy metal weight title that is defended under a 24/7 clause. That's right. The actual Instagram, I believe, is DDT Pro_IronMan_N_USA. So back in May, at the end of May, Joey Ryan won the title while he was on tour with DDT Pro Wrestling over in Japan. So the belt has come over here, and it has been absolutely hysterical how this belt has changed hands. And it has changed hands like, I don't know, 30, 40, 50 times in the last few weeks, but it is hilarious. Some of the ways that title has lost is obviously in regular matches, sometimes through sneak attacks, while someone was napping, traded for some sweetness from some ladies. You heard what I said, some sweetness from some ladies. During a massage, I mean, just the way, the creative and crazy way in which this title has bounced around the United States has been very entertaining. And each one of these little videos on Instagram are not very long either, so you get a chuckle in about 3 or 4 minutes. But definitely, if you like wacky pro wrestling antics, check it out. It is DDT Pro_IronMan_N_USA over there on Instagram. And with that, I gotta say that my Instagram is back up and kind of working, although it every once in a while it gets glitchy on me. I don't know what the deal is. I think my phone is pretty much crapped out on me. It doesn't hold a charge anymore, and Instagram doesn't work, and Facebook stopped working for a while too. Anyways, I digress. Nonetheless, you can check me out over on Instagram at the username PVDMVP. It's also the same username that you can find me on Twitter at PVDMVP. If you'd like to shoot me an email, you can do so, johnorlando@pvdcast.com. please do not forget to check out the PVD cast over on Stitcher Radio, where you can stream it or you can download it. You can even download it over at SoundCloud as well. Just look for the PVD cast. And of course, I would be amiss if I didn't say it's always available at pvdcast.com. So tell a friend, tell two friends, three friends, eight friends, it doesn't matter. I appreciate you spreading the good word about this podcast. With that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to close up shop. I thank you for listening, and I'll chat at each and every one of you later.